Well, if it's Monday, it must be Kearns and Moore here on North Shore Sports Night. Welcome to North Shore Sports Night, Thanksgiving week. It ain't the usual Thanksgiving week that we're used to, but Tim, how you doing, brother?
I'm good, Rick. You know, like hopefully most sensible people, avoiding crowds, wearing a mask,
Well, I should point out here, we've got a pretty good guest list tonight. It's going to be sort of reminiscing and just going hopscotching all the way around, as the late great Al Needham used to say, hopscotching the region for news. We're going to talk with former Gloucester High School football head coach and assistant coach all over the place, Paul Ingram, who's a Massachusetts High School football coach's Hall of Famer. We're going to talk with him about Thanksgiving and other stuff as well. We're going to check in with Gary Larrabee, a sports historian and golf writer. He's got a little bit to talk about on golf, and then we're going to touch on other subjects. And we'll also be talking with Mike Grenier, a sports journalist, about the goings-on with the Celtics that have my head spinning. I'm not enamored to talk about the Patriots tonight, although we can. I want to start this program on a somber note, and I'm sure Coach Ingram might have something to say as well. we lost a colleague in Gloucester today, Paul and I, and many of us who taught at Gloucester. Paul Riley passed away, and Paul is known as a former high school hockey coach at Gloucester High School, among other things. An incredible athlete. He was a terrific football player, lightning speed, also a great hockey player, played hockey at UMass also, and he played with his brother Don, also a former hockey coach at Gloucester High School, and Don also well known, and Don, of course, the father of Lauren Riley Gove, whom Tim has had and knows very well. She's the field hockey coach. So there's a tremendous legacy of the Riley family at Gloucester High School, and we lost the older brother today, Paul, yesterday, I guess it was, and my sincere, heartfelt condolences to Nancy, to Don and Joanne and all the kids. Paul Riley is one of the nicest guys I've ever known and ever worked with. So a very sad day in Gloucester sports, Tim.
Yeah, that's, at our age, Rick, we forget that age is creeping up on us, and from time to time, people that we know fall by the wayside, and it's just a reminder of our own mortality, and it makes us think back to how these individuals enriched our own lives at different points along the way.
That's well spoken. That's well spoken. The Riley family certainly has enriched lives, and including mine. I've been fortunate to be in their glow a little bit every now and then under their umbrella, and it's really cool. But God, we go back so many years, and I remember when I was a junior and a senior out at UMass, the Riley brothers were playing out there in the UMass hockey team with Coach Jack Kniff. And every year that Coach Kniff had the UMass team, they set a new record for wins. And it was in large part due to a bunch of Gloucester kids, including Don Riley, Paul Riley, and a kid named Bill Brown. And, just great memories. Turning the page, if we can get into some sports, Tim, we are going to be talking to Coach Ingram. I do want to mention that I have a retrospective coming up this week, talking to high school football coaches in the region about, first of all, what they're doing right now. And a lot of them have been able to work with kids this fall season, although, of course, there's been no competition per se. That hasn't been allowed. But I also want them to reminisce about what Thanksgiving week means and what the Thanksgiving football game means. And Tim, I know you were brought up in the region, you left the region, you came back. So, kind of what are your thoughts on Thanksgiving Day football? Because you've been doing this with us for 15 years. We haven't been home on Thanksgiving morning.
Yeah, it was strange that I grew up, my high school didn't have a football team at the time, Don Savio, though they eventually would not long after I graduated. But to participate in the annual pageantry of Lynn Classic and Lynn English at Manning Bowl, in the old bowl, was something. You'd have 10,000 people in the stands, and it was just a great take growing up. And you know, the Marblehead. My dad went to Marblehead High, so he was always a big follower of the Marblehead Swampskin tradition. And so every now and then we would go over there. But it just adds so much to the holiday itself. When I went down to Maryland to teach, you know, and suddenly the football season was over the end of October, and it was like, you don't play on Thanksgiving, you know? And Massachusetts is one of the few states in the country where the kids do play on Thanksgiving, and it just adds so much to the holiday season. It's so ingrained as part of our regional culture that not to have it is going to be a void. A lot of people are going to wake up Thanksgiving morning thinking, okay, I got to get ready to go. I'm not going to the game this year.
And it starts. You know? It's
so
really.
I imagine there'll be a lot more flag football games in people's backyards this year.
And it really starts 10 days before. I mean, you know, with that last regular season game, that's when you start gearing up for Thanksgiving. And I'm glad you mentioned classical English, because that was always one of our featured games here on MSO News Sports. Gloucester Danvers was the other, and also Beverly Salem. And Beverly Salem, Marty Smith, Bill Newell, and I, we go back to Beverly Salem way back into the late 70s, and it was always a pleasure to do those games. But I also want to point out that Lynn Classical and Lynn English, where they have officially left the Northeastern Conference now, Bill Newell, right here on this page where you're listening to this, Bill Newell has interviewed both directors of athletics at each school, Dick Newton and Bill Devlin, and they talk very candidly about the move over to the Greater Boston League. And it is not a slight or any sour grapes to the Northeastern Conference. It's just a better fit for them at this particular time. And the good news is that they're still, at least in football, probably basketball and baseball, going to try to keep some of the rivalries with the Northeastern Conference schools open, you know, when they have the non-conference games scheduled.
Yeah, I'm still at a loss to understand the rationale for their leaving. I think mentioned last week that part of it was transportation. You know, you're going to be going, you know, Revere. I don't know if Chelsea's in the Commonwealth. You're going to be traveling probably further than
Chelsea's back in the GBL now.
What's that?
Chelsea is back in the GBL now.
Chelsea is back. They're going to go Revere, Chelsea, Somerville. Okay, you know, these other schools, and it's like going, you're not saving anything in transportation costs. I don't know.
I don't think it has to do with transportation, Tim. The ADs really spell it out, and so I encourage people.
Bill's interview.
Yeah, I encourage people to take a look at that, because they spell it out. There are some really good underlying reasons that they've done this, and both the GBL unanimously welcomed them in, and the NEC unanimously, and I'm hoping reluctantly to a degree, but unanimously said go ahead and go. But again, they're leaving the door open for competition with some of their NEC rivals, and thank goodness for that. And we'll be talking with the classical and English coaches, as we always do. You know, they're going to be part of our coverage for sure. All right, we need to take a break, Coach, and we'll come back with old friend Paul Ingram, if I can figure out how to do this. What do you think, Tim? What's your betting? What are the odds I can pull this off? 50-50 at best. Okay, Coach, thank you. Appreciate it. All right, we'll be right back. Okay, I forgot to put in, hold on, I forgot to put our thumb drive back in that has, it has our spots on it and has our breaks on it, so I have to put this back into the computer.
You're killing me.
I know. Well, if you were here, it's all your fault, you're not here.
I don't do any of that anyway.
I don't know how you can blame me, you're not here. So, there you go. Alright, let's try it again. Press the button, that's working. Hit this button.
I'm Bob Gillis, president of Cape Ann Savings Bank, serving the Cape Ann community with stability and commitment for over 170 years. Since 1846, our customers have relied on our local bank service and big bank benefits. Stop by our offices or call to talk about your banking needs at 978-283-0246. Built on community, KPNSavings.bank.
Member FDIC. Member DIF. Equal housing lender.
Blue Collar Lobster at the Gloucester House Restaurant, 63 Rogers Street, is open daily from 11:30 a.m. to 9 p.m. for takeout, outdoor dining, or inside table service at the Cafe Seven Seas. Blue Collar Lobster offers high-top tables with umbrellas, a tented area with tables and chairs, a canopy area with picnic tables, and seating in the open-air portion of Cafe Seven Seas, all with a view of the working harbor. Full bar service is available, and bartenders are ready to make you a delicious cocktail. Enjoy the food and the view, and stay as long as you like at Blue Collar Lobster, 63 Rogers Street, Gloucester. To view the Blue Collar Lobster menu, visit thegloucesterhouse.com.
Did you grow up in an alcoholic or dysfunctional home? Were you abused or suffered childhood trauma at the hands of a parent or caregiver? Have you tried self-help or counseling without success? ACA can help. ACA is a 12-step recovery program for adults whose lives are affected as a result of being raised in an alcoholic or dysfunctional family. To find out how others like you have found healing from traumatic childhoods, go to adultchildren.org. That's adultchildren.org.
All right, we are back, and my pleasure to bring on now Coach Paul Ingram, former Gloucester High School head coach for quite a few years in Massachusetts High School Football Coaches Hall of Famer, and coaching in so many places for so long. Paul, how are you doing?
Well, I guess I'm doing as well as everybody else. It's kind of a unique atmosphere and, you know, kind of staying close to home. So it's kind of sad. I feel bad for these kids. You know, seems like there's no continuity to life anymore here with the way schools are set up and going to school, not going to school, and then practice routines for sports. So I don't know. I feel bad for them, that's for sure.
Paul, you stay in contact with a lot of former coaches, a lot of former students as well as coaches. And I know Adam Philpott is one of your former players, and he's going to be the new basketball player. Coach at Gloucester High. Are there other former students that you've been able to connect with, let's say, since March or last football season?
Well, a few of them. I think, to be quite honest, I think a lot of them have moved out of the area just to try something new. I think that they're, you know, it was probably a tough winter for all of them. And I know four or five have moved out to California. And just trying to see what it's like out there and kind of get a different, perspective on life. So they're working, they're able to do jobs from, other locations. So that's happened. You know, I haven't talked to Mike Tomeno. He's a football coach in, Roxbury Latin, and, I don't know how he's doing with this whole situation. What's the word on basketball? Is Adam said anything about it's going to happen?
Yeah, I just talked with Jim Rudloff, and I'm going to put that interview on tomorrow. But Jim said be sure to say hi to Coach Ingram, and he speaks so highly of you, Paul. But one of the things he was mentioning was the kids got a real lift. The football players did when it was announced that basketball and hockey are on. They plan to play. Their plans, you know, there should be a season. You know, of course, that's now. That's today, and it's – you know, it's up in the air. But as of right now, hockey and basketball are scheduled to begin. I'm not exactly sure when, but they are going to play. And by hearing that, the football players got a real positive lift because that gives them a better chance, hopefully, for them to play, you know, at the end of February.
Right, yeah. Well, that's good news. Hopefully, you know, we get things under control and, you know, the vaccines become available and we can get back to somewhat normal atmosphere around high school sports anyways.
Yeah. Tim?
So, Paul, what have you been doing with your time here?
Well, I haven't really gone away. I joined Bass Rocks Golf Club in Gloucester probably about 20 years ago, and I was on the Board of Governors for a while, and then I became the vice president for 2 years and then the president. And last two years I've been president. I gave it up in June. So actually, I went to all the committee meetings, so it really kept me busy. And it was good stuff. I really kind of enjoyed it, and I enjoyed the different people in the committees and, you know, the operation of the golf club. I really got involved in that. And so that was kept me busy, playing a little golf keeps me busy. And, you know, I just find odd jobs to do, I guess, around the house.
Have you been able to get down to the Cape at all?
Yes, I've been down a couple of times. You know, we've, you know, unfortunately, a lot of times in this day and age, it's bad news. You get together for, you know, medical situations or for funerals. But, yeah, I went down and saw some of my high school friends. But, you know, they're all in the same boat down there, too, kind of sticking close to home. And, you know, sports being up in the air. I know that one of the people that I visit was big into the Cape Cod Baseball League, and they've always had a player stay at their house. I'm not sure, you know, what's going to happen in the future for that, too. They really were great sponsors.
Yeah. All right, let's go to some football beyond high school. What can Bill Belichick do to get some stability with the team?
You really want my opinion?
Yeah, no.
Well, I think, you know, I've watched a couple of games, and I'm not sold on Cam Newton.
Thank you. I feel the same way.
Well, you know, yesterday he had five passes blocked. And that's, if you're just looking and looking and looking, you know, in the same direction, obviously, you know, you're eventually going to throw there. And it's, you know, you've got to use your eyes to throw some deceit into the defensive backs. You kind of look people off. And I played quarterback in college, and certainly I was like 5'10 and a half. And I don't even remember. You find, you know, these windows to throw the ball through. But it just, one of my things when I was coaching quarterbacks was, you know, throw a catchable ball. Throw a ball that someone's going to catch. And, you know, to me, everything, it seems like it's, you know, it's too high, too low, behind. And if they do catch it, it's not usually in stride. And I just don't think his accuracy. And, you know, he's certainly 6'6", 6'7". I just don't understand it. But, you know, you've always got to depend on the people around you too. I mean, you got to have good line play. You got to have somewhat of a running game, and you got to have receivers that get open. So it's probably a combination of a lot of things, but his accuracy, I question.
Well, you know, you watch him throw. He doesn't throw with a snap of the wrist. It's all push. I mean, it shows how strong his arm is that he can push the ball down the field as far as he does. But I mean, there's no really kind of baseball motion, you know, where his elbow's up, his arm's extended, he follows through. It's just a push of the ball that drives me crazy to watch.
Yeah, I haven't really examined that much, but I know that when you overthrow people, it's you're throwing off your back foot, your weight is back. Yeah, I noticed that a lot. He underthrows and overthrows a lot. And it's, you know, when you're in the, it's one of the tough things to do at quarterback is when you're in the pocket is to step forward because you're going to put that weight on that, being right-handed, you're going to put that weight on that left foot and that left knee locks in and you get hit there and it's, you know, it's certainly not a good thing, but you can't throw off your back foot. The ball sails on. It just tends to, you know, go 3-4 feet higher than anticipated.
Paul, talk about that because you were a quarterback's coach. And for many years, every quarterback you coached ended up being one of the best passers in the NEC. And I go back to, was it Paul Coleman? And do I have the name right? Paul Coleman and Duke St. Pierre. And there was another player over there, too. I can't remember. Was it Perron? I can't remember. There was another player over at Danvers. But tell me about that in teaching kids how to do that, because technique is something with a football. A baseball, it's easy. The baseball is small, but a football is big.
Well, yeah, and it's important to, you know, at a young age, start gripping the ball right and throwing it right. And, you know, part of the problem, too, is getting a ball that your hand can fit around. But one of the things that I see with the younger kids when I get them when they're a little bit older is when you throw a baseball, you know, if you're going to throw a curveball, you know, you turn your wrist in towards your body. Mm-hmm. Well, a football is the exact opposite. Actually, your wrist turns outward.
Mm-hmm.
So that index finger releases the ball last. And I find that a lot of the young kids throw a football like they would throw a baseball, and it doesn't work. You've got to eventually get that finger and wrist to turn outward. And, you know, the proper grip on the ball, and a lot of kids, I think you see this with all kinds of ball sports, is they tend to, you know, grab the ball at the palm of their hand, and it's really your fingertips.
Right.
You don't want to palm the ball. And that was another issue with the kids. But, you know, if you get them young, and I found that, you know, like with the instance with Tom Brady, former catchers really have a nice quick release and strong arm. And I thought a lot of those kids, Brett Cahill, just really, you know, quick release, strong arm, and also you got to have toughness to stay in there too.
Coach, one of the things we want to talk about tonight is Thanksgiving, and you go back to your days as an assistant coach in Danvers and in Beverly and in Gloucester, and then on to your head coaching days. And what was it like coaching in the different places, the atmosphere for Thanksgiving? And I mentioned those three communities, but we could also throw in Falmouth. What were some of the similarities or differences when that last regular season game ends, and then you got to prepare a week and a half for your Thanksgiving Day game?
Well, it was always special. And the thing was that I've always been a part of good rivalries. Like at Falmouth, we played Barnstable. And, I mean, we get 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000 people at the games. And it just really meant a lot between the two towns. And then, you know, Danvers, Gloucester, it wasn't that big of a rivalry at first, but I think it's gotten that way now where, you know, it's a pretty tough game, and usually both teams are doing well during the season. I will say that I coached at Beverly 1 year, and I just couldn't believe the Beverly-Salem game. It really was unique.
It still is.
Yeah, I mean, the crowd and you know, I've only attended one game when I was an assistant coach with Roger Rosinski, but certainly was kind of an exciting atmosphere. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, when I first started dating my wife, of course, she's from Beverly, and Billy Hammond was coaching there, and I get to get out and prowl along the sidelines, and over in Salem, I mean, the intensity was just insane. I mean, you could literally feel the electricity as you walked along the sidelines there.
Yeah, yeah, and especially if it's a close game, it's really exciting. But I think I've talked about this before with you guys, is, you know, Thanksgiving is so different, and, you know, you look so forward to it, and you have those extra days, you know, that first week, you know, you kind of plan. We did some things with the kids. We went bowling. You know, we tried to do some team bonding things. And then certainly the night before the game, we would have a big meal, and we had this thing called the burning of the shoe. And we did it at Springfield College, where you take an old football shoe, not like the new ones, but, and you'd soak it in kerosene and then light it on fire under the goalpost. And the seniors would talk about, you know, what football meant to them. And it was really, you know, a nice time, you know, some kids, it was a real big part of their life, and they really, really did a great job talking about it.
Paul, we don't have you on enough, and I miss working with you on Friday evenings when we can talk some of this stuff over. But I think my final topic would be the coaching fraternity, because, you know, you started with I remember when I first met you, and you were talking about Bob Yates, who had moved up here from Falmouth, and then so many of the other coaches you work with, Ernie Smith and Bruce Jordan, and it just goes on and on and on. And reflect a little on that coaching fraternity, but also the coaches you work with at Gloucester High School, too.
Well, you know, I've remained close to a lot of the coaches. Most of them that I've coached with now have gotten out of coaching, and I see Ernie Smith quite a bit, and you know, I will see Roger Day, and I see some coaches that are out of the area that I see through different things I'm involved with. So we certainly do have a lot of respect for each other, and you know, to be quite honest, a lot of times we tease each other about games and losses and play calls and all this stuff. So there's usually a pretty good camaraderie there. You know, the Gloucester guys, you know, it's funny, this COVID thing. I mean, Tony Zerilli took over for me. I used to see him and Mike Ladoff and all my assistants, and it just seems like right now it's everybody's kind of hunkered down, and you know, but I assume once that football gets going and you can go to the games, you know, we'll all be sitting there and watching the games and get back involved in it.
Mm-hmm.
Just seems like, you know, it's so far away now. It's been so long.
Well, I think one of the things that they can do once the football gets jammed into the tweener season that's going to be is they can somehow manage to schedule the traditional Thanksgiving Day rivalry as the final game.
Yeah, that's a good idea, Tim. I have a question for Tim. You know, if they put this football season in between basketball and baseball, what do you think the baseball players are going to do? Are they going to say, well, I don't want to go out for football, I'm going to work on baseball, because that's, I'm kind of worried about that, the numbers of kids that are going to participate at that time of the year, and you know, practicing in February outdoors is not exactly, you know, I mean, we had out of synthetic turf, but it's a difficult situation when it's so cold.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how the coaches, you know, will react to whether they say, you know, really, geez, with baseball right around the corner, you really can't afford to play football if you get hurt, da da da. There's no time to recover. I would never tell a kid not to play. Go and play. If you're going to get hurt, it's in the times. You're going to get either hurt in the fall or you get hurt in the spring. And, you know, and if you're going into the senior year, you know, a lot of the kids who lost their senior last year still got scholarships, still got offers from various colleges because they're all evaluated on their junior year. So if you've solidified your position as a player on the radar of coaches around the country, then you're still going to get an opportunity to play, I'm sure. But I think a lot of your better athletes, your high end, they may opt out, but I don't think they will. I think there's that competitive nature where I'm going to play as many sports as I can, and you know the MIA says you can play them all right back to back to back. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Even if they overlap. So I think you've got to see the kids out there.
Well, I hope so.
Because I think
we're all kind of looking forward to it, you know, seeing some high school football.
Well, Coach, you're going to have to dress warm when we go up in the press box. It's going to be cold in some of those places in February and March.
Yeah. Well, hopefully we get to do it.
We will get to do it.
Don't bring enough layers. Rick has some he can lend you.
That's right. I got more in the car, Paul, if you need them.
Yeah, he's even dressed warm with the heat on in his car.
That's right. That's right.
It's ridiculous.
Okay, go to. That's enough, Tim.
Phil Stacey and I are in the Bulls with shorts and t-shirts, and here's Rick with seven layers, and he's got the heater on, going blast, full blast on the floor.
I know.
Okay, you guys can both go to your room now. Paul, I appreciate it. Listen, happy Thanksgiving, truncated and subdued as it might be, to you and your family, and we will talk again soon. Thank you very much, Coach.
Okay. Good to talk to you guys. Bye.
Talk to you, Paul.
Talk to you later, Paul. That is Paul Ingram, former Gloucester High School football coach and High School Hall of Fame football coach. We'll take a break now, and we'll come back with Gary Larrabee, and then Mike Grenier, or Mike Larrabee, I don't know, for that matter. All right, let's see if I can do this right this time after messing up last time. So we'll press this. Go to your room. Oh, my word.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention is working to help keep you and your community safe from the threat of novel or new coronavirus. Take the following everyday steps to help avoid the spread of all respiratory viruses. Wash your hands often with soap and water for at least 20 seconds. Cover your cough or sneeze with a tissue. Throw the tissue away and then wash your hands. Avoid touching your eyes, nose, and mouth. Clean and disinfect frequently touched objects or surfaces, such as remote controls and doorknobs. Avoid close contact with people who are sick. And stay home if you are sick. Call your healthcare provider if you develop fever, cough, or difficulty breathing. For more tips, visit cdc.gov.
Alrighty then. Oh my goodness. You don't want to know what's going on behind the scenes here. We want to welcome Gary Larrabee back. Gary, of course, sports historian, golf writer, sports journalist. Gary, how you doing?
Always a pleasure to join you, Richard.
Well, thank you. I don't know what to get. There's no formal for Gary. I mean, you know, I don't know what to do. So much going on, Gary, but we need to, we need to talk a little bit about wrapping this thing up with golf. What's going on in the world of golf at any and every level?
Well, it's pretty well shut down around here except for an occasional pleasure round if you can find some pleasurable temperatures. But we can talk a little bit about the PGA Tour. They had the RSM Classic over the weekend at Seaside Island Resort down in Georgia, and a fella named Robert Streb was the winner. He won a cool million plus.
Ooh.
And in a playoff with Kevin Kinzer. But the thing that we saw with the outcome here was the fact that there are certain courses made for certain horses. This is the second time Streb has won this tournament on this golf course. He's never won any other tournament on the tour. So good for Mr. Streb. And of course we've seen where other courses are for certain horses, like, you know, Tiger Woods has won a million times at Bay Hill at the Arnold Palmer tournament. He's won that 7 or 8 times. He's won several times at Torrey Pines out in San Diego, including that dramatic U.S. Open playoff victory over Rocco Mediate when Tiger played with allegedly a semi-broken leg or something. Yeah, of course, Nicholas won 6 Masters at Augusta National. So it's a smaller example, but still an example of where certain golf courses are for certain horses. In this case, Robert Streb won his second at the Seaside Island in Georgia, down near the bottom of the earnings list, we saw Rob Oppenheim from Salem and Andover finish winning $14,000. And he's not in great shape money-wise or FedEx Cup point-wise as we gradually wind down the 2020 PGA Tour season. But keep in mind that the Tour, because of the pandemic, they're going to play two seasons of PGA Tour golf before they do any chopping amongst players who might be borderline. And certainly Oppenheim is borderline. But he's still out there hanging in there and trying to make it happen, and we'll see if he does anything else before we get into the holidays. Most likely not. And that's pretty much where we, I think, we stand on the Pro Tour. I don't think too many people are interested in the LPGA Tour. Where Sung Young Kim won in Bel Air, Florida yesterday. But they are still playing. The ladies are, and what are your impressions, Tim, of what happened over the weekend?
Well, you know, after the Masters, I think the following week almost becomes an afterthought to a lot of casual viewers. I didn't watch. I did see the results, and once again, I went, "Who?" So it's like the week that, you know, a lot of the big names take off and go and relax and recharge. You get a lot of the lesser names coming up and being able to put their names on the front page of the papers.
No, you're right, and I can't really see a real name player. Jason Day played, finished among the All-Sorans, and Webb Simpson played among the All-Sorans, but not one real headline player amongst the top five, seven, eight players, you know, talking about Dustin Johnson, who won the Masters last week, and McIlroy. Tiger didn't play, of course, and but they're playing out their string, and there's lots of money still to be won, and we'll see how it resumes. But really, I think everyone's starting to look forward to 2021.
Well, let's hope it's better. You know, it looks like we just have to be patient. You know, we're this close, but we still have to be patient, and this close could be a way away. You know, Gary, we've been talking, Tim and I and Paul Ingram, and I talked with a couple of football coaches that I'll be posting tomorrow about Thanksgiving around here. And, you know, you were at the Salem News for a while. What's your reminiscing about Thanksgiving? Did you... You know, when I worked at the radio station, I worked every holiday, all around, year round. Did you have that same pleasure?
I was at the Salem News for 25 years, and I worked 25 Thanksgiving days on the football beat. So it was just part of the job, and it was exciting. Those were exciting days, unless the weather was horrible. But a couple of particular memories I have. One, which is quite tragic, was the year that I covered the Salem-Beverly game, and Mitch Carrier.
Oh.
I believe it was returning a kickoff, and got tackled the wrong way and became permanently paralyzed from that play. I'll never forget seeing that happen at Salem. I believe it was at Salem, and I'll never forget Danvers losing 3-0 in Gloucester after they had taken on Lynn Classical in one of the biggest games in DMSI football history. They were both 7-0, and they played on a Sunday afternoon before a huge crowd at Manning Bowl, and they lost that one, I believe, 12-0, their first loss of the season. And then they moved on to Thanksgiving, and I think that was when they were playing 9 games in a season, guys, and they went down to Gloucester as a pretty solid favorite, and they lost again, shut out again, 3-0. But a great game on the Gloucester side, and a very disappointing finish to a exceptional season for Davis.
Yeah, I don't know. That might have been before my time up here. I don't remember, but I do know that it's kind of weird when you work these especially Thanksgiving, Gary and Tim. I'm not used to being home on Thanksgiving morning, and even on Thanksgiving Eve, I'm getting ready. I'm getting my notes together. I'm getting my depth charts together and so on. So I'm kind of really not paying attention to what's going on out in the kitchen. So this Thanksgiving is going to be a little weird. Have you made the adjustment, Gary, to enjoying Thanksgiving morning at home?
Oh, sure. After doing it for 25 years, I don't think I've been to maybe two or three Thanksgiving games.
Okay.
Left the news in 95. But I appreciate the value of the day, the importance of the day. It means so much to so many people, not just the players and the coaches, but the families of the players. And it's a special feeling from the moment you wake up. It's a little bit like Christmas Eve the night before.
Yep.
And it's a little bit like Christmas Day once you get up and you get going and kickoffs to 10 o'clock. A lot of great, great history has been made on Thanksgiving, like football history. And but no, Rick, I don't miss it, but I feel very bad the kids are going to miss
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
And hopefully they'll be back playing high school football on Thanksgiving next year, but there's no guarantees.
Hey, Gary.
Yeah.
Gary. What are the odds Martha encourages Rick to go out of the house for like 3 hours Thanksgiving morning?
Probably pretty good. Yeah, probably pretty good. Tim, final question for Gary. What you got?
Well, is the PGA Tour schedule for 2021 simply going to jump back into normal, quote unquote, mode as we round the corner? Will they begin to play the regular schedule of tournament events and the Masters slide back into April?
Correct, but you know, nothing is guaranteed with the
right.
COVID-19 right now, and right now there will be no spectators, I don't believe, when the PGA Tour starts up in January, most likely with their two tournaments in Hawaii. One's the Tournament of Champions and the regular tour at the Sony Open, but that's a ways off, guys. We're talking 6 weeks or so, I think, and let's hope they can play those tournaments and get the season underway. But you know, this COVID-19 thing is getting awfully ugly everywhere, virtually everywhere.
Yeah.
By the way, guys, I work at security at the Peabody Essex Museum, and since we reopened, we've had certain states. We had maybe 10 or 12 states where people could come in the front door, and just come in and go up to the admissions desk and come into the museum, because they were from certain states where the incidence of COVID-19 was quite low. But the number has dwindled so much so, guys, that as of Saturday, Sunday, we had two states in America, including Massachusetts, or three states. If you lived in Massachusetts, you can come in any time, where you could come in without having to show a COVID-19 negative test in the last 3 to 5 days. And those states were, guys, you want to guess which two states, in addition to Massachusetts? We've reduced the number of states we can just come into the museum.
Hawaii, they have the
yep.
lowest incidence.
Very good.
And probably Vermont.
Very, very good. You were ready for me on that one, Tim. Congratulations. But that's how bad it's gotten, guys, and I don't know how bad it's going to get. And it will affect the PGA Tour, and it will affect the LPGA Tour and the Champions Tours, but at least they got their seasons in, relatively speaking, after a terrible stretch there in March, April, May. And we can always think golf, try to stay warm, and look forward to what's coming in 2021.
And, Gary, certainly wish you a very great Thanksgiving, happy Thanksgiving. If it's subdued, that's okay. Just be safe and enjoy the day.
Everybody should be thinking that way, Rick. And thank you, and also to you and to Tim and to all of yours.
Thank you.
Let's stay well. And
we're off next week, so we'll see you in two, Gary.
Look forward to it. Stay well, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Gary, yeah, I miss your articles and then Salem News.
Thanks, Tim. All in good time. We'll be back at some point.
Amen. All right. That's Gary Larrabee, sports historian, golf writer. Yeah, I think for a lot of people, Thanksgiving is going to be a tad subdued. We're going to take a break, and we'll come back with Mike Grenier, also a sports journalist. And I think the main topic will be the Celtics, because, as I said, I am so confused as to what went on this week with the Celtics. And I don't know if it's plus, minus, or somewhere in between. So one more break here, and then we'll be back with MSO News Sports. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky. Bill Newell's got a terrific interview with both Lynn Athletic Directors, the public schools, Lynn English and Lynn Classical, right here on this page. So please check that out. And also, the Salem News writers, the Salem News Sports writers, are also with Bill on this post. So we'll be right back.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Thanksgiving all right. To you, first of all.
Thank you. Thank you, Mike.
And well.
Yep.
Yeah, we're keeping it very humble, you know. It's just three or four people, that's it. Just our own little family. Can't.
And that's,
you
know. I think that's par for us.
I'm not inviting the Indians this year.
Okay, Tim. That's interesting. You're being a history teacher. We're back with Mike Grenier, Tim Kearns. I'm Rick Moore. And by the way, our email address is msonewsports@gmail.com. And yeah, obviously that's number one, Mike, is the safety issue. And of so many people I've talked with locally, at least anecdotally, are honoring that. We've got the COVID has hit the outer portion of the family, and it hasn't been devastating. I'm knocking on wood here, but you know, we're just going to keep it very small, very subdued. And my thing is that we're this close to getting better, to get everything better. And it would be awful to want to have a normal Thanksgiving day, have a party, have a lot of laughs, and then someone go home and die. And then you got the vaccination right after that. So.
That's right.
Just
try to
be patient.
Yep. Yeah, this is a time when you have to be ever more vigilant, and you sacrifice this Thanksgiving basically by having only your household.
Yep.
Family celebrate and still have a good day. You're sacrificing this year for hopefully maybe 3 or 4 months down the road when there's a vaccine available, and hopefully next year there's some sense of normalcy, people going to events, people getting together, families getting together, and all that. And maybe next Thanksgiving we're celebrating in a much different way.
Yeah, we are. It's going to happen. It's going to happen. Yeah. All right, Mike, you got to tell me. Do I have a right to be messed up by what happened with the Celtics this week?
No, you have every right to be mixed up. I know that, Tim, you follow it closely. Rick, you do too. And I was mystified. Well, first of all, I was not mystified that Gordon Hayward left, okay? There seemed to be some sort of a little bit of friction or whatever you want to call it. He was determined to leave. You know, he'd gone from being maybe the number one option offensively 3 years ago, and then Kyrie came along, and it was going to be the big two, and then all of a sudden Jason Tatum comes along, and he becomes an all-star. Jaylen Brown also came along during that period and became a much better player, you know, the cusp of being an all-star. I think he will be at some point soon. And now you pick up Kemba Walker. So, you know, he missed the bottom line is he missed 142 games in three seasons. And since you're talking about this past season being curtailed because of COVID and going into the bubble, he probably missed 50% of the Celtics games while he was in a Boston uniform. So I think some people wanted him to move on, and they were glad that he moved on. So the mystery part to me, guys, is what did Danny Ainge get in return? Supposedly it was going to be a trade, sign and trade,
with Indiana because all indications were that Gordon Haywood wanted to go back home to Indiana. And all of a sudden there was talk that Miles Turner, who was a 6'11" big man, only 23 years old and shows a lot of promise, was going to be part of that exchange and come to the Celtics. And supposedly the holdup was who was going to be perhaps a second player from the Indiana Pacers roster that would come to the Celtics. And, you know, there were a lot of rumors that that player, that Ainge wanted Victor Oladipo, who, of course, had a serious knee injury a year or so ago, but who has been an all-star a couple of years ago. So had that been the case and Oladipo and Miles Turner came here, that would have been a tremendous haul for Danny Ainge to have for a guy who didn't want to be here anymore, mm-hmm. Gordon Haywood. However, things broke down. Next thing you see, Gordon Haywood signs with Atlanta, 4 years and $120 million, and Ainge was sort of left grasping and ends up with Tristan Thompson, you know, a Cleveland Cavaliers guy, and Jeff Teague, who's 32 years old. And, you know, so that's where it stands right now. We're just not quite sure how those two will work out as, I guess, the building blocks that the Celtics already have.
The money that Gordon Haywood got, well, you explain that to me. Compare his money with what they gave Jason Tatum.
Well, yeah, of course. Well, everyone knew that Jason Tatum was going to be getting. I mean, he's a cornerstone. We've talked about he along with Jaylen Brown are the cornerstones of the franchise. Jaylen Brown got his money a year or so ago, and everyone knew that the Celtics wanted to keep Jason Tatum, and that to do that they would have to give him a max contract, which turns out to be 5 years, $163 million guaranteed. He could reach certain goals and make $195 million. And it's a 5-year contract, but he can opt out after 4 years. So it's crazy money. But however, Donovan Mitchell, the Utah Jazz, just signed almost the exact same deal, same kind of 3 years experience. And so did DeAndre Fox, the Sacramento Kings, who's not nearly as good as Jason Tatum. They just gave him $163 million out in Sacramento. So it makes sense in the NBA these days of monopoly money. It made sense for the Celtics to tie up Jason Tatum for the next 5 years, hopefully, when there's still a window of opportunity to win it all. What we don't know yet is, will the surrounding parts be good enough to get to that level that they haven't quite reached yet, which is the NBA Finals?
I just want to make one little correction. I don't think you noticed. You said it, Mike. You mentioned Atlanta for Gordon Haywood, but he did go to Charlotte, right?
I'm sorry. I meant Charlotte. Okay.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, Rondo went to Atlanta,
yep.
I believe. Our old friend, yes. Atlanta, Charlotte, they're both losing teams. So, I mean, I'm sorry. That was a slip of the tongue. I want to apologize to the fans who jumped right on top of that.
No. Well, I tell you.
Charlotte, right. I mean, obviously, guys, Charlotte's not going anywhere. You know, like someone wrote, they might go from 12th in the East to 10th in the East. But Gordon Haywood, you know, you can't blame him. He's not going to turn down $120 million for 4 years. I was stunned that the Charlotte Hornets would want to pay him that much over a four-year period, especially when he's going to be on the back end of his career at that point.
Okay, before I turn it over to Tim, tell me about the draft and do the Celtics, do they get a big man who can actually help? I mean, Enes Kanter's gone, so what's the story?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, a year ago we would have said, oh, Carson Edwards, he's the three-point shooter they need. And Robert Williams, you know, the guy they got 2 years ago, was going to develop into the big man they need. And neither of those things happened. So to me, you know, they got the kid from Vanderbilt, Nesmith, who's, you know, he shot like 52% from three-point land and all this stuff. But it's a lot different in the college game. The three-point shot is much closer than the NBA range three-point shot. And, of course, they got this kid, Pritchard, who's a kind of like a six-foot guy who shoots the ball well, but he is only about 6 feet tall. And so you kind of wonder, but he's sure enough, you know, that's why he didn't get chosen at number 14 or 15. He was up around the 26th spot. So you just don't know how these guys will develop. Even the guys that are in the top five in the lottery selections, you don't know how good those guys are going to be. So you get guys getting drafted from Tel Aviv, Israel, who have never played a college game in their lives. You get guys who are drafted from foreign nations, and they've only played in the Euro leagues. And you just have no idea. It's not like the old days when guys would play 3 or 4 years at Duke and at UNLV and North Carolina, and you knew what you were getting. Right now, at this point, I don't even know if Ainge knows what he's gotten with those guys, you know? So, you know, I'm kind of interested to see what's going to happen with Tristan Thompson. I mean, I'm sure, Tim, you've seen him play with the Cavaliers. He's 6'9". He's got legitimate height, and he's a strong guy. He averaged 12 points and 10 rebounds per game this past season. And those are pretty good figures. Those are pretty good numbers. He's 29 years old, so it's not like he's old yet. However, it's the first thing you see, guys, when you Google Tristan Thompson is pictures of Kim and Khloe Kardashian.
Okay.
Okay, and that's because he had a reality show with one of the Kardashians, Khloe. And then they got separated. I don't even know if they were married. They got separated, and now there's reconciling and all. So I don't know what kind of baggage that is going to bring to Boston. You hope that he's going to concentrate on basketball because he's a legitimately decent, good player. He may even have a chance to start ahead of Daniel Tice. However, we don't know. I mean, Thompson is a guy that there's a lot of unpredictables because of that baggage, him being a kind of a Hollywood reality guy, you know?
Jeez.
And yeah, I'm almost kind of surprised that Danny allowed himself to go in that direction.
Right.
We tend to seem to, in Boston, stay away from the Hollywood type simply because, you know, people around here really don't have the stomach for that kind of nonsense.
That's right. That would play, you're right, Tim, that would play in Los Angeles, but not here.
Exactly. You know, like, this NBA draft, as I follow this throughout the evening, going back and forth and looking, I've never seen a draft where, for the casual viewer, I had no idea who these guys were.
Right.
Usually there are a number of college stars who just, you know who they are, even if you're just watching every now and then, but these kids have name value, they're out there, and there's always a handful, up to like 10 of them, that you know who these guys are, and the big question, okay, now where are they gonna go? Who are they gonna end up with? There was nobody that I knew coming out of that draft.
Well, yeah, same thing here, and I try to follow it closely. For example, one of the few guys I knew was LaMelo Ball, who was taken, I think, Lonzo Ball's brother.
That's because of the nonsense that he does.
Yeah.
Not because of his basketball skills.
Right. Yeah, and the thing is, he did not even play in the United States. He played in Lithuania and Australia, and who knows how good he is. But yet he's a very high draft pick. And so that's why sometimes you wonder if the number 14 guy, like the Celtics got, might be as good as the number 4 guy. So it's such an inexact science, despite all the advances that have been made technologically speaking with computer following guys, analytics and all that. We still don't know when they get out. At the age of 18 or 19, we have no idea how they're going to perform against the LeBron Jameses of the world. We just don't know if guys like that are going to be predictably good or predictably bad. And so it comes down to, let's get the season going and we'll find out. And sometimes it takes a player's 2 or 3 years to develop. You know, it seems like Danny Ainge did a great job, obviously, when he moved, you know, he got Jason Tatum at the number 3 spot and Jaylen Brown the previous year. Both those guys have panned out. I mean, we're talking about two guys who totally, this past season, between them, averaged 45 points a game. So that's a pretty good start to any game. You got two young guys who are going to get you somewhere between 40 and 60 or 70 points. So
and you know, Mike, that's what made Gordon Hayward expendable.
Yeah,
the growth of those two guys, the consistency of their play, the athleticism, the fact that they haven't suffered major injuries. You know, and you just couldn't count on Hayward. It was like, He was like the Rex Burkhardt of the Celtics. You were just waiting for the moment he was going to get down.
Yeah, it became, you know, the strange thing, Tim and Rick, is that in his first 7 seasons with the Utah Jazz, he missed a total of 42 games. So he was playing basically, you know, 75, 76 games per season, only missing 5. And then he comes to the Celtics, he misses obviously about 100 games his first year, counting the playoffs. because he got hurt in the very first game, and then he went on to lose another 62 games worth of scheduling with injuries. And of course, even when he came back against the Miami Heat in the Eastern Conference Finals, he was maybe 60 or 65%. I give him credit for wanting to come back and trying to get the Celtics over the top and into the finals, but he was not close to 100% in those last couple of games of the playoffs. So you're right, he became more expendable. And then we got to add that, you know, with Kemba Walker coming aboard a year ago, another potential 20, 22 points per game every single night, you know, that made Hayward even more expendable. So yeah, I can see him moving on, and the Celtics, okay, that he was going to move on. It was a player option. But I'm still wondering if Danny Ainge might have overplayed his hand by holding out for too many good players from the Indiana Pacers.
Well, Mike,
you can't get every move right, and you know only Red Auerbach was allowed to do that.
right. Ainge, obviously, he did it right by getting Tatum and Jaylen Brown and getting Kemba Walker and all that. So many of the pieces are there. You're looking for those complementary pieces. You know, you need a scorer coming off the bench. I still don't think they have that, unless one of these draft kids works out. And you need like a backup center, you know. So if it's Tristan Thompson and Tice, maybe that's a workable combination. I don't think they lost anything with Kanter leaving the team. Kanter was a decent scorer and rebounder, but boy, he was certainly deficient on defense.
Mike, this has been great. You helped me out a lot. I'm still messed up, but that's okay. You know, we've got a while before the season starts again, December 1 or something like that, so that's good. And we're going to be – we're off next week, Mike. I'm taking next Monday night off.
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
But we'll do it 2 weeks from now, okay?
Yeah, absolutely. And by then, you know, guys, it's funny. It's amazing. The NBA season starts on December 22nd, as if it still stands with the COVID everything, you know. So I'm hoping that – everyone in our listening area and everyone across America can pay attention to authorities and say, let's keep Thanksgiving safe, because you're right, Rick, we're all right around the corner from getting a vaccine, and that's what we want.
Well, I know Tim seconds that, and so do I. Mike, have a great Thanksgiving. Enjoy, watch football, relax, and we'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Sounds great.
Thank you, Mike.
Have a nice evening, Mike.
You too.
Take care.
Thank you.
That is Mike Grenier, who was a sports journalist and Celtic expert, really. Coach, I want to wish you a very happy Thanksgiving. You got, is the turkey thawing as we speak?
Well, I don't know. I stay out of the kitchen.
You don't know is the answer.
No. My responsibility is to help clean the house beforehand and then get out of the way.
All right. I have to do the dishes, so I'm very familiar with that responsibility. I'm with you on that one. Oh, and also, I get to turn the turkey over while it's thawing. I do that. But that's about it. And ordinarily, not around on Thursday morning.
Yeah, well, I tried to convince Medium to just, you know, go out and buy the whole thing so we wouldn't have to do it for the cooking, but she wants to cook it, so.
Well, we're going to do some Zoom meetings and some FaceTime with our relatives and friends in the area. We're going to try to party that way and see how that develops. But we're trying to be stalwart here and be stoic and just kind of put this thing off. And again, I guess the only word I can use is just continue to be patient.
Be patient, be wise. You know, and people just have to smarten up. I was in Glossy yesterday at the Market Basket, and I observed the one-way signs. In fact, I yelled at a guy yesterday coming up the aisle the wrong way, and he turned around and went back. But this woman comes screaming, I'm walking across all the aisles. This woman comes in, and she goes right down the wrong aisle. I don't care.
Yeah.
And they go, okay, so let your kid get sick, and then see if you care. Well, you know, I can't believe the utter stupidity of people. I really can't.
I think it's
just hope at some point, you know, that there's a glimmer of intelligence that goes off in these people's minds, you know, before someone close to them gets sick.
Well, I would hope there's a sense of empathy and compassion, is what I would hope for, and understanding. But patience is the word in this house, and I'm looking forward to eating turkey for the next several weeks, so that should be good.
Okay,
Coach, we're going to take a
happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, Tim. Thank you, and I really look forward to the day when you're back in the studio with me. I hope that's not too far away.
Well, at some point, but to you and all the family, my good friends, again, enjoy the day and stay safe.
Thank you, Tim. Same to you and Medium and your family as well. Take care.
Thank you much.
All right, yeah. Good night. That's Tim Kearns, who is our MSO sports analyst extraordinaire and also our ambassador of goodwill, and I can't say that enough times. He's just a great, great part of MSO. You can email us at msonewsports@gmail.com, and I just echo everything that Tim and Mike and everybody else has said. We wish you a very happy Thanksgiving, but do what is suggested. You know, try to keep it low-key, keep it safe, and you know, keep this thing, start turning this thing around. All right, that's it. Lots of stuff coming up this week on MSO News Sports. Please check us out every day. Lots of stuff up there right now with Bill Newell's interviews right here on this very same post. For Tim Kearns and Bill Newell and Bill Proposky, I'm Rick Moore. Have a happy Thanksgiving.